Hi everyone, and welcome to My Creative Podcast. My name is Cindy, I'm the host of this show, and today I would like to introduce you to Mac. Mac is a game developer who founded his own company named Boardlight Studio. He is also one of our teachers at mycreativeclass.com. In this conversation, we'll talk about his passion for animation that led him to his creative path, working on making things come to life. Hi, Mac.
Hi there, Cindy.
Thank you so much again for taking some time to come on the show. Before we start our conversation, can you please, for the people who don't know you, introduce yourself? So if you can give me your name, where you live, and what's your job?
Sure. Yeah. No, I just want to say thanks for having me on the show. It's really fun to be sharing, you know, some stuff about game development and that kind of things, which kind of brings me to the fact that I, my name is Mac and I'm a game developer based out of Seattle. I'm both working on games and animation as well.
I see. Seattle, does that mean you get tons of rain or just a little bit of rain?
It's a lot of rain, but this summer has been really dry. So we moved here thinking it was going to be raining like nonstop. And it's actually pretty manageable.
Huh. See? Okay. So yeah, let's kick at those cliches. That's good. So before we dive into your job description and a little bit what it means, can you try to remember like the 10-year-old Mac? Do you remember how you were when you were like a pre-teenager?
Pre-teenager, let's think back many years ago. Hopefully not too many. Yeah,
we won't count the candles. It's all good.
We won't keep track of how many years. Thinking back when I was a kid, I loved movies. I loved animation. And I also loved playing games, mostly on the computer. My dad didn't let us play games, really. And so we'd have to kind of sneak them. And so my brother and I would play computer games like all the time, you know, just in our room, but we didn't have a console or anything like a Nintendo because we weren't really allowed to have one.
But really?
Yeah, which is kind of funny that, you know, I ended up making games, but surprisingly there was a lot of really good games that were kind of low budget. They were computer games. You wouldn't see them in a store, but like, we would trade them with friends at school on floppy disks. And so that was just that also dates me, but that was back then they had floppy disks instead of CDs.
Those are the gray kind of squarish stuff that you were putting into your computer, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was like a square, a disk, and you'd put it in and it could hold 1.6 megabytes. So that's a tiny, you know, amount of data. But there were some games that were like really fun, like Sims, like SimCity was a big one. But then there was, you know, all kinds of stuff like space games, and just every day we'd kind of come home with something new, it felt like. And it was always fun to explore that.
Wait, so does that mean you were pretty much playing only computer game, or you were not even allowed to play any console games?
Yeah, until I was in, until I was about 12 when I did finally get a Sega Genesis, because it was so exciting because I kind of was able to somehow ask all my friends to pitch in for my birthday to get me one. I don't really remember how that worked because I can't imagine most friends buying a console for their friend, but
it's a good leadership.
It worked out. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I had a strong goal. And I really went for it. And
So thinking back to those days, do you think like if your dad would allow you to play more games, would you have like such a fun passion for it?
I know it's actually a really good question that I've thought about before, which is, you know, if I had unlimited access to games and could play them all I wanted, maybe it would have been boring or something like that. And I would have quickly kind of just moved on. But because it was kind of this like forbidden thing for us, it was kind of like, the forbidden fruit of games was kind of, it was just exciting to explore games. And there was even some software on Macintosh computers back then that allowed you to do some basic kind of games without even really programming. And so I remember dabbling with some of that too. And that was really exciting to do like a point and click kind of adventure. I remember I did like you go in a taxi and you explore a city. Yeah. Anyway, that is funny to think about. Like maybe if I had all the consoles, I just would have kind of never worried about, you know, getting more into it.
You would say it will be just an interest that you have for games, or it will be like a devoted passion for it, or like what you think dive you into this direction? Do you think, oh, I love PC game, I want to be a game developer? Do you think it was straight from age 12 that you were seeking maybe doing that for a living?
I think I wasn't thinking in terms of a career or doing something for a living. I just knew that it was really fun and exciting to explore these worlds, these virtual worlds that were on these discs, and you'd kind of put a new one in and before you knew it, you were in some new world. I mean, I remember so many of these kind of story-based adventure games that had what seemingly, you know, really deep worlds you could explore. Like Zork, there was one called Return to Zork, or Myst was a big one. And you could kind of just go into these worlds and explore. And I thought that was really magical. So I think that, yeah, from an early age, I wanted to make games, but I also wanted to make movies because there was a little bit of a side to that same thing of like storytelling and world building, that there's some crossover. But I don't think I knew that game development was even like a career path. Yeah. I just kind of knew that some people, you know, I guess I knew people were making them, but I didn't know what the process was, or like I had no idea about the technical process. And there wasn't as much information either, because the internet was just starting around this time. Maybe even if I again date myself, it was kind of like pre-internet. And these floppy disks were kind of like my internet, like, you know, trading them with people and trading files and stuff like that. And yeah.
What was thriving you about, you know, this universe?
Yeah, I think what was kind of exciting me was that, I mean, I really loved the movies. They really, you know, there was a lot of classics too that I enjoyed, like The Sword in the Stone, Aladdin, you know, Lion King, I think, had come out around this time too. And I think I was seeing these movies coming out, and I was already into animation. So I was already working on my own animated movies with like hand-drawn animation and claymation and that kind of thing. And I was dabbling in those things. And I think I saw the Disney movies, and I just was so impressed by, you know, the technical quality, just how the lifelike some of the movements were that they gave the characters. So I think I was just really drawn to the quality level of these movies, and how I thought, well, to be a Disney animator, you got to be the best of the best. So it was kind of like striving to be kind of the best animator, I guess.
So in that way, seems like what you really want to do was like putting things into life, you would say, like
like kind of bring something to life and kind of you know, the magic of seeing something come alive. I think that's probably one of my primary drivers back then, was like, you know, you could make a character on a piece of paper, you could draw a character, and then, you know, you draw several drawings and all of a sudden it's moving and it could be talking or walking. And it was very challenging to make it look good and look like it was really moving lifelike in a lifelike way. But, you know, you could make that happen. And it was really exciting to think about, you know, and what kind of stories and worlds you could create if you had, like, you know, you basically could do anything in your imagination with animation, which is a little different than even like movies with people in them, like live action. Like, it was harder to do like anything in your imagination, but with animation, you could just kind of draw it and make it come to life in that way. So yeah, that was really exciting, I think.
You mentioned Disney, but did you have any other big inspiration when you were a kid?
I would say, yeah, I definitely did. I remember I was obsessed with Tim Burton because I saw Batman Returns and I got so obsessed with that movie. And I guess most kids might have been obsessed just with the character and maybe with the actor, but I got movie magazines and I was reading about Tim Burton and his movies. And then he came out with The Nightmare Before Christmas and I got obsessed with that movie. Yeah. And then he has, you know, other movies like Beetlejuice and stuff. And I liked all of his movies and I thought, wow, like, this is something that, you know, it's someone's vision or voice is, you know, which is different than some other movies, which may be entirely different style. Mm-hmm. And so I think I realized at around that age that, like, yeah, there was other, you know, directors and animators that I really got into. And interestingly enough, Tim Burton actually worked for Disney, but
yeah, so I was going to ask you, like, if by that time he was still working at Disney or he was on his own.
I think I had no idea he had worked for Disney at that time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't until later when maybe a year or so later, and I read like a biography of him that he had worked on like some of the Disney movies like Fox and the Hound and The Black Cauldron. And then he got he was able to do some movies after that through mm-hmm. Disney. But yeah, I don't think I knew that at the time. And, you know, there's other directors and artists like Steven Spielberg and Jurassic Park. That was a big one for me. Mm-hmm. I think the special effects kind of blew me away. And Jim Henson and The Muppets and The Dark Crystal and those kinds of things. Those also really, creating those worlds was really, really fascinating for me, I think.
So it seems like you were really passionate about movies more so than game development. So how did you, I know they're very similar, but how did you transition from movie to game development?
Yeah, that's actually a good question.
If you did do the transition.
Yeah, right. Because no, it's funny. I didn't even transition to games when I was a kid as much. I mean, I mentioned that I kind of was playing around with some software that allowed me to make some basic, simple games without programming. But I was pretty set on animation and movies for a long time. And in fact, it's still to this day something that I enjoy doing. Mm. But I think that games always felt a little bit distant because I knew you kind of had to learn like very technical skills, like programming in a computer, programming language. And I had explored that a little bit, but I found it kind of difficult to wrap my head around at that age. And so it wasn't until later, I would say starting to be in college, when I really, I saw there were some classes I could take. And also there was some new software that allowed you to make games that at a more advanced level. And you could start to use programming, but also it didn't require being a master, you know, professional programmer. You could kind of be an amateur programmer and start to do some games. And so it wasn't until I would say college actually that I really started to explore interaction with some of this other stuff like animation. And it's really the combination of interactivity and animation that makes a game, basically.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I never thought about it, but yeah, I guess it's true. It's very similar. So today you made it as a game developer. Can you tell us a little bit what this job is? Is it a creative job? Is it like a programming job? What it is?
Sure. Yeah. That's it's interesting to to think about that, because there's a lot of different skills involved in making a game. There's a lot of different like roles you can have, and depending on what you want to do, I mean, you could be an animator, or you could be a programmer, or you could be a writer, you know, writing the stories, or a character designer. So there's a lot of roles. My background is primarily in more indie games, so like smaller teams, and which meaning smaller teams means you wear more different hats, like different roles you're taking on. So
so instead of a World of Warcraft, you would be more like a Stardew Valley type of field?
That's a great example. Stardew Valley was actually made by one person, which that's is crazy. Crazy. It's really impressive, because that one person made a game that some people are playing for hundreds of hours.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty unbelievable when you think about
that. Even when, I mean, I had a chance to play with it a little. It's like, it keeps you entertained. And the story, you got to go and meet some people in town and stuff. I can't believe this guy made everything from scratch on his own for like, I think 5 years.
Exactly. Yeah, that game, I think you're right, it took about 5 years. And, you know, so he had to do the, like you said, you know, you're meeting the characters, so you got to write all the dialogue for them. So it's a lot of storytelling, and then all the design of the characters. So it's actually a really good example of a game that, you know, you think about, you know, drawing the characters. And that game's 2D graphics, so two-dimensional. I've worked on mostly like three-dimensional games, which means not only are you drawing the characters, but you're also modeling them in three dimensions using, you know, sculpting, 3D digital sculpting software, that kind of thing. And so you're taking a character, then you're modeling it in 3D, you're putting actually what's called like a rig or a bone system underneath the character so that you can move it.
Well, like an animated movie, right? Like a Pixar
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, just like
so
a Pixar movie.
So here we go. Here's the connection.
Yeah, so that's why a lot of my skills in animation that I developed over time since I was a kid came in handy pretty quickly with game development. Because you're making a character in 3D, you're giving it the rig, you're animating it with keyframes, which is the sort of technical way you move the character step by step to do the actions that you want it to. And then you're taking those animations, and then you're adding the programming. So you're bringing it into a game engine like Unity is a great one these days, or Unreal. Those are both really powerful software game engines, and they allow you to render advanced textures and lighting and details like that, and it has animation systems that you can bring in your animation. And so then you're layering all these different things along with the coding. And so a lot of people just might focus on one area, like just the coding or just the animation or that kind of thing.
But because you're in the studio, because since then you created your own studio called Board Light, so you wear multiple hats. As you said, like it's not like you just code. It's like you're also doing the 3D model, the rendering, I mean the storytelling, all that, right?
So it's like as an indie developer, I worked with a small group of people, some other artists, and you know, to put together a game. You know, the last game we made is called Spectro, and that game took 5 years. So similar
to
Stardew
Valley.
Yeah, I know, right? We could have done a faster game, but so you know, I was kind of the lead on it, and kind of doing the only full time work on it, because then I worked with some other people sort of more on like a freelance basis.
I see.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of different roles. And kind of like, just like, you know, you were saying, it's like you have to wear lots of hats.
But so if you have one hat that you like the most, which one it is?
That's a tough one, because I do. Yeah. Like it's funny, because there's different parts of it that can be that can be really fun and interesting. And then there's some hats that I really would prefer not to wear that I would just put in the closet. But my favorite is probably like the 3D modeling the characters. I love giving personality to the characters. And also like designing the environments is also fun to think about, like, you know, what are the players going to explore, and, you know, all the little details and, you know, nooks and crannies and secrets that they might uncover in a level. And, you know, kind of getting into that is really fun. So I have fun with kind of designing the world and the characters. Those are probably my favorite things to do.
So just very quickly, because I just thought about it. So what now you did think about the fact that you create like games, something that you would not allow you to play back then when you were a kid?
Yeah, it is really funny to think about, because there was a time when I was a kid where he really thought they were kind of just like almost bad for you, like they weren't helpful, like they weren't a good educational thing. But, you know, I think he's changed his mind quite a bit, and of course he understands that it's kind of I don't know, like a lot of people play games now, and so making them is kind of a really cool thing in a certain way. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think he really respects that. And well, he's not really a gamer. I have had him play some of my games, and he kind of is funny watching him play, because you know, he doesn't even know how to use the controller, but he does kind of get through it. And I think he at least does it for my sake. But yeah, so I think he really thinks it. You know, it's a great thing to work on, and he's an artist as well, and so I think he understands that there's a lot of creativity involved in making games. So yeah.
So yeah, you think your parents overall like supported you decision professionally? I mean,
yeah, definitely. I mean, they've always supported me as far as like when I was pursuing more just animation and filmmaking. They were always very supportive of that, even though I know there's a lot of people whose parents might not support that kind of thing, because it might sound like there's no future in being a filmmaker or something like that. But you know, they were always really, really supportive of that, and so I you know, am really thankful for that. And to this day, yeah, I mean, they're always excited to hear about new projects I'm working on, and like I said, neither of them are really gamers, but they're happy to at least try it and see what I'm working on, and so that's always fun too.
I guess it's really hard to push your kids through creativity sometimes when you think it might not be a pragmatic enough job. So I think that's the mission of this podcast, is really trying to highlight those beautiful jobs that we can seek. And try to understand.
Yeah, that's a great cause. Yeah, I mean, I think I was lucky that I came from a family that actually my parents are both artists, and so they know that it's possible to be an artist and be have a successful career, and they've done a number of different things in their careers with their art, and so I think that that's always been inspiring to me too. And I think it's great to have people understand that, you know, creativity can be a really rewarding career path in many different ways, you know. So yeah.
Speaking of this creativity, did you ever doubt about yours? I mean, you know, this creative path that you were willing to take?
You know, sure. Yeah, definitely. There's been times where I've definitely had doubts, and you know, I think that's something that happens throughout your life and your career and your pursuits. Like, you're always going to have doubts come up. When I was younger, I would have doubts, but it wasn't like about whether it was realistic to make a living being, let's say, an animator or something like that. It was more just, because I saw that it was possible, because I knew like these people I looked up to had done it. So it felt like, oh, if they did it, why can't I? But of course, then, you know, sometimes I'd be working on something and it wouldn't live up to my expectations in terms of what I thought, you know, I wanted it to be. In my head, it might have been different than what I actually was able to make, just, you know, because you get better and more skilled over time, and you're always improving. And so, yeah, there's sometimes where I would think, hey, this, I don't know if this is good enough. Am I good enough to keep doing this? And that's a really hard thing. That's a really hard thing to feel.
But so how you overcome those fears? I mean, we all have them, I think, in some degrees, but I think more so in a creative path. So how you overcome, you know, those feelings?
Yeah. I think it can be tough. And I think there's not always one easy answer. I think that, like you said, everybody has doubts sometimes, or feeling like maybe they don't fit into what they're trying to do in some way. And I think realizing that is helpful. I think just knowing that you're not alone and in having doubts sometimes. And then also just going back and thinking, hey, in the past I've had a doubt about something, but I kept on working and I got through it, and then I was happy with something I made. And so I think it's experience will teach you that there you'll have moments of doubt, but if you work hard and you keep working through it, that, you know, eventually you know, you may get past the doubt and get back into just feeling really invigorated and excited about what you're working on. So I think that, and also like not only having one expectation about what you're working on, like just success, you know, $1 million or something like that. You can have different levels of success and learning. And so, yeah, I think that's important to remember too.
And as of today, from all those fears and feeling that you overcome, what would you say is your biggest accomplishment?
I would say, you know, releasing a game after 5 years felt like a pretty, it was a pretty big accomplishment for me. And because like, it's such a long time, and it was the longest project I'd ever worked on. And I had worked on some other long projects. And even as a kid, you know, one of my early movies, I spent, I don't know, about 2.5 years on it. And as a kid, that feels like, it feels like forever. A decade. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's hard to even describe how long that feels. But the 5-year project, you know, let's say with Spectro, that might be one of the bigger accomplishments, is just seeing that all through and you know, getting really positive feedback on it. And, you know, so that's something that definitely it feels good to have released.
Yeah, I bet. Now, if you look back at the mini you when you were 10, 12 year old, what would you say to him to guide him through this journey of finding his creative path?
Yeah, that's always a fun one to think about. And I don't know.
You were already devoted when you were a kid, if you just said like you worked on a 2+ year project. So
yeah, it's true. I was already kind of all in. I was already kind of like,
tell him, if you think that was long, get ready for Spectro.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I think I would have been like, that's good practice, but you know, there's going to be more hard work like that. I think that I would kind of, it's probably similar advice that I remind myself today, which is, you know, like the creative process, it really is about the process and about, you know, really just the journey of it, right? Like that's the classic thing they say, it's about the journey, you know, because it's not a single finish line where you're like, okay, I finished all my creative work and now I'm done and I'm satisfied. You know, I think I would just remind myself, like, just make sure, you know, you keep on working on things that you are really excited about and that you enjoy and that you are fulfilled by in all different ways, because it is about just the process of making things. And it's not just about a destination and finishing and getting an award or something like that, which is maybe nice as well, but just have fun with it. Yeah. that's probably the best advice I would give my younger self.
All right. Well, I'm sure you would have appreciated this advice. And well, I would like to ask you one final question to wrap up this conversation, Mike. Today, what is your favorite game?
That's a tough one. That's a very tough one.
Guess it's Stardew Valley or Spectral, right?
I know, right? No, you can't. you can't say your own game. That's for sure. But my favorite game, the one I think I always go back to, and it never gets old for me. Well, there's actually a few like that, but the one that sticks out in my mind is probably a game called Machinarium. And it's kind of an odd name. And it's kind of one that's not like super well known, but if you play adventure games, it's pretty well known. And it's a world of kind of robots, and you're kind of exploring this kind of just mysterious robot world, kind of sci-fi dystopia. And it's just a really cool world, soundtrack, characters, you know, everything about it, just the atmosphere of it is so interesting. And then I love exploring it. And so that's one I always go back to.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm on Google Image. And it's true that the artwork is really polished. There is a little Tim Burton feel to it, no?
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah. It's kind of got this quirky Tim Burton feel, kind of a little strange, a little
dark.
A little dark, a little in the style of the characters, a little sketchy, not fully like polished, and if you could hear the soundtrack, I recommend you listen to it, because it's such a atmospheric soundtrack that I can even listen to the soundtrack without playing the game, and I really enjoy it.
Well, I guess I'll let you go and listen to it then, because I think that was my final question for us today.
That's great. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, thanks again for having me. And you know, I think this is a great, like you said, your mission is really great, because I really think creativity is so important, and it can help in so many different ways, you know, problem solving and just creating really fun and interesting projects. So thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for your experience, and you know, through the process. Again, gotta enjoy the process, not the destination. So now, thank you so much again, Mike, for coming on the show.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Cindy. And it was a lot of fun.
This is the end of this episode. I hope you really enjoyed it. My takeaway from this conversation is that we should be open-minded about our interests and passion, because one creative path can bring us to the next one, and the next one to the next one. We do not have to fit into just one creative box. We can just make our own. But let me know what your takeaway was from this episode. I'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas. You can reach out at mycreativeclass.com. Thank you again to Mike for sharing with us his creative journey. I left his info in the description of this episode. And if you like this show, please share it with your friends and family. Or, you know, a random person on the street. That works too. Thank you, and talk to you next week.